the Initial Reaction Podcast, where our talent is always on a bye week. I am JP Cadorn from Time Warner Cable Sports Channel. Sitting next to me digitally is
J.R. Radcliffe from Lake Country Publications and Now Newspapers. It's a working bye week, I feel. I feel like we're working through the bye.
Well, they're working. They're looking over game tape and rest. Technically, for them, rest is actually part of, like, work. Like, they need to recover. For us, rest is, you know, status quo.
Yes, the Green Bay Packers have plenty of healing that needs to be done since they were missing their entire defense against the Detroit Lions, but still found a way to win. So maybe we'll talk a little Packers at the end of this, but that is not the main ticket today. We have lots to discuss. We'll talk a little high school football for starters. As JP and I covered the same game, it was an exciting festival of us on Friday night. Not a Division I or II or III game either. We were at one of those small school games that has some charm to it, so we'll talk about that. Lots of Badger stuff in the news. Clearly, the win over Michigan State was huge. I chatted with Mark Snyder of the Detroit Free Press, who covers the Michigan football team. That's the team we'll be seeing this weekend as the Badgers get ready to take on the number 4 team in the country at the Big House. First time in 6 years they've played the Wolverines. So that'll be fun, and talk to him about Michigan State in general, also their offensive lineman, one of their offensive linemen, Ben Bredesen of Arrowhead, a true freshman who has seen the field quite a bit. He was part of their big recruiting class and is obviously a guy we know pretty well. So talked about him a little bit too. And then the Milwaukee Bucks, the sad face of the Wisconsin sports weekend with Chris Middleton getting injured, probably out for most, if not all the year. Yeah,
comes back in 6 months, like they say he will, March 28th, because he's having the surgery tomorrow, March 28th, there will be 9 games left of the regular season, plus, I don't know, like 30 playoff games, of course.
I don't even see how in the world he would then come back, right? Because if he's going to be, I mean, you're not going to try to insert something new. Basketball is just a game where you can't mess with the chemistry if you've got something cooking. Maybe they'll need him at that point, but I can't imagine that there's going to be a scenario where it'd be like, wow, everything is different when Chris Middleton comes back. I can't think they're going to do
that. I think from a chemistry standpoint, they could. I think it's just physical of how well he could come back.
Right.
Plus, like, which I think is going to be fine because it's not like it's going to be 6 months and then he starts running for the first time. I mean, he's going to be, you know, running 2 months from now. So I think it'll be a slow process of him getting back that if he's ready in 6 months, I don't expect there to be a huge rust to shake off, but who knows? No way of predicting that.
We'll have some clips that JP captured at Bucks Media Day early in the week. Always an exciting time, mm-hmm, these media days. Of course, Giannis Antetokounmpo, I didn't say that right, but it's fun to say it how I did, has a new contract, so there's also a story there in that the Bucks are still pretty excited about what they have going on in the present and in the future.
As they should be. So we talked about bye week and rest, and you know who needs a lot of rest? Guys who play Division 4, 5, 6, or 7 football in high school, because those guys are freaking warriors. They are out on legitimately every play, especially if you're somebody like, oh, I don't know, Declan Eaton, our new favorite, who plays offensive line, defensive line, and kicks for university school.
Yeah, Declan Eaton, 6'3", 325, and we were tweeting, Snapchatting about him a little bit. I hope he doesn't think we're making fun of him, because clearly...
No, he even wrote back to me on Twitter.
Did he? Okay, that's great.
He did. Big
guys succeeding like that are awesome. I love it.
That's the thing. I'm like, dude, you're out there every snap. Keep it up, man.
Yeah, so he is not their full-time kicker. He's their backup kicker because the starter is a member of the soccer team, and they had a big battle going on, so he couldn't travel to Lake Country Lutheran for this Division 5/6 game that you and I saw. Between two 5-0 teams, I mean, university school is incredible in that they came into the battle 5-0. They did not win. Lake Country Lutheran won pretty handily, kind of pulled away in the second half. They got 23 guys on the roster, which is tiny. I mean, even for Division 5, for a program that's having success, that's a really small number of kids. And so, like what you're talking about with the rest, everybody's playing both ways. You know, they've got athletes on, their best players are never off the field, even on special teams. They can't afford it. So Declan Eaton, who's one of the bigger kickers you'll see, actually did pretty well, kicked a couple extra points for university school.
Yeah.
And one unfortunate lonely moment was the last man standing between a kickoff return and, you know, in the end zone. So Lake Country Lutheran was able to return that kickoff for a touchdown. But USM, impressive that they've been able to keep it afloat. They got some big bodies up front. Michael Balestrieri who 6'5", I want to say, you know, 285 or something like that.
Huge kid.
Talented. Like that's a Division I-II type of player, and I think he even has a walk-on offer at Wisconsin already offered. So, you know, he's the real deal. And they've got a couple other guys who fit the bill as well. They just don't have the numbers. So Lake Country Lutheran was able to pull away in the end.
Yeah, most impressive to me, there was a goal line stand not done by the USM defense, done by Balistrieri.
Yes.
He had all three stops. He was awesome to watch. But no, it was a cool game. Lake Country Lutheran has new stands as of 2 or 3 years ago, I want to say. So that was my first time being there with stands on the property. As you know, the highlight for me of the game was clearly the fact that the concession stand had Culver's Burgers.
Congratulations to you, Jim.
Which I definitely indulged in during halftime, but that was awesome. So Lake Country Lutheran ranked 5th in Division 6. They are 6-0. University school, a good team. Again, the numbers hurt them, so I don't know if they can make a run, but that was nice. We're now getting into teams have clinched playoff berths. Mm-hmm. Teams are inching closer to conference titles, at least, you know, getting a share of a conference title. We're into it. This is week 7 coming up.
Yeah, the latter third of the regular season is upon us. And you can check out all things Milwaukee area football at The Push, which is located at mycommunitynow.com/push. Got a rundown of all the teams that are already in, teams that are one win away, teams that are on the fence, which I want to talk about one particular team on the fence, that being Arrowhead, as they went down to Catholic Memorial. So they are 2-2 in conference. They've been to the playoffs 20 straight years. And I won't say that they're really on the fence. I think Arrowhead still gets into the playoffs, and I don't think it's going to be close per se, but it's an unusual spot for them. They're never this vulnerable. So that's definitely something to keep an eye on. But we run down all the teams that are headed to the playoffs. I mean, University School is going to go too, even though they lost this game and haven't clinched yet. Definitely one of the top 4 teams in the Midwest Classic. So they're going to wind up going to the postseason as well, and be interesting to see how far they can go with the personnel they have on hand. I know you liked the small school atmosphere. At one point, a fan yelled something at the referee, not like an insult, just sort of why, I don't remember, why is the clock running?
It was a fumble. He asked, which way is it going? He asked, like, who had the ball? Which way is it going? And the ref looked up and yelled back, it's staying here.
Yeah.
And it's like, how often do you ever see that at any level?
Right.
Of a ref answering a fan's question. And that's not to say that there were only like 40 fans there too. There were what, maybe 300, something like that? I mean, the stands were full and there were people lining the fence too.
Yeah, it was a pretty good turnout for that level. And yes, I remember they hadn't made a very clear indication which way the ball was going to go, and they'd kind of started reassembling, and a fan was like, what's going on? And the referee answered him. It was pretty great.
I loved it.
Yeah, it's good to every now and then go watch a smaller school. You don't get that in Milwaukee. You don't get that level of play, especially high-level play. I mean, that's what this was, and it's on natural grass, which I have not actually seen a game on natural grass this year until this past week, week 6. So with everybody going to artificial field turf, it's just sort of a reminder that level of football is still out there and still fun to watch.
Did you get your shoes dirty? Was that your concern?
My shoes did get dirty. It was very upsetting. It was very wet still. I walked through some mud puddles to get there, JP.
Well, I think it was nice being able to cover the game with you because, as always, as we do during games, our eyes were elsewhere. And I think we were both watching Brookfield Central against Marquette, mainly because it was a game that aired live on Time Warner Cable Sports Channel that night, but also because those two teams are kind of good. Brookfield Central ended up winning. I'm not surprised by it, but it's certainly a big win for them. Right?
Definitely, yeah. That, again, I completely agree with you. Not surprised, but it was a very close game. It sort of came down to the wire. I know Thomas Gibson had a big touchdown catch. Drew Lozinski, their quarterback, is only a sophomore, I believe, but is really, really opening some eyes. A lot of people are very high on him. And, of course, Zach Heckman, the junior running back, is tearing it up. He's just piling up yards. I mean, at this point, and I did write a piece looking at the All Suburban Player of the Year candidates on my First and Short blog, which you can also see at that mycommunitynow.com/push. But he's definitely in that conversation as Player of the Year material because he is posting some seriously high numbers. And Brookfield Central now alone in first place in the Greater Metro at this point. And we've talked about this already, but they're the favorite to win the league, and I think they're probably they're a level 4 team at worst, I think, in Division 2. I think that's the expectation at this point, and maybe even a step beyond that to the state championship game. They're that level right now.
All right, time for your PSA. JR, please help the people. Please explain to them what Oconomowoc is and what they're doing.
The Oconomowoc football team?
Yes, please.
You never...
Try and understand what is going on.
I honestly don't know if I can explain Oconomowoc. I'm not sure they could either. They... So, this just doesn't happen in high school football, where you get a team that can afford to go down and still have the offensive firepower to win. Oconomowoc has been in 6 games. They've won them all. They have trailed in all of them. They've gone down by 2 scores in most of them. And I think there's only 2 that they haven't trailed by 2 touchdowns at any point. And they were down again against West Bend East. West Bend East came in 1-4. They're not one of the powerhouses in the Little Ten by any means. But they do have a very good offense. And they were moving the football and scoring on them. And again, Oconomowoc, I think this is a game where they did not actually go down 2 scores, although I'm not positive of that. And they were able to rally back. They ended up winning pretty handily because they have this insane offense with the quarterback Ben Nienhuis and Zach Clayton at receiver, and their running back Jacob Rams went off for a monster game. He had 5 touchdowns, and he's been dinged up. He hasn't been able to play a full game until this week, so that's a huge asset for them. I don't know if that defense is ever going to find itself, but it certainly has a chance to get confidence in the latter part of the schedule where the teams aren't perceptibly as tough. And they go into this homecoming battle with Slinger, and you assume that they're going to win. But honestly, you go to an Oconomowoc game, and I honestly don't know if you can predict, even though you know they're one of the best in the state, what you're going to see. It's very crazy. It's a fun team. There's nothing like this in high school football. A team that has this.
They are crazy, and they are the 4th ranked team in Division I, in the biggest division in football.
Deservedly. So, I mean, they've won all their games.
Who knows?
I think
it's just crazy. We've talked about it, and I wanted you to share your thoughts because it's insane what they're doing.
Yeah, I think you have to say to yourself, is this a team that can win in the playoffs? And I would be concerned. I mean, I don't think you can expect that team to go up against Arrowhead, which they did last year in level 3, took it down to the wire, and that they'd have the defense at this point to hold an Arrowhead in check. At the same time, they've won all their games. I mean, they can outscore anyone. And at some point, you say to yourself, maybe they can just keep doing this. I mean, you think it's going to catch up to them, but it hasn't yet. So I don't know. I really don't know what to make of them. They're fascinating.
2 other quick high school notes before we move on. First of all, Whitefish Bay dropped their, I believe, the first game of the year, even on a Thursday night, to Brookfield Central. And since then has won 5 straight. So overall, their record is the same as Homestead, and they are the same in conference as well. So Whitefish Bay actually has a chance. Or no, did Homestead lose a conference game?
No,
they lost to Arrowhead.
Yeah, those 2 teams will be undefeated, I think, when they meet in a couple weeks.
Yeah, which is fantastic to see Whitefish Bay first year under a new head coach after legendary Jim Teachum passed away last year. So they are having a quietly good season. I think they've just kind of worked their way up. I think they were forgotten about by a lot of people after losing to Brook Central, but have worked their way back up. So good to see that. And the second thing I want to say is that the biggest story for me and for a lot of people not in Milwaukee this week is Kimberly. They are going for their 49th win in a row this Friday. They have gone 14-0, 14-0, 14-0, and now they are 6-0. So they have won 48 right now, which ties the state record with Wanakee and Manitowoc Lincoln. And if they win Friday against Appleton West, which in most years is a extremely winnable game, this year it should probably be a winnable game. If they win, they will officially be the best program in state history, at least in, you can make the argument in Division I / Division II where they've won their state titles, but even then, if nobody does what they're about to do, that's pretty insane.
Let's put a percentage on the chance that Kimberly doesn't get this record this weekend. What do you think? Is it 2% that they don't win this game? I mean, they're going to win.
Yeah, I mean, it's 5-10%. I mean, again, Appleton West is good this year. I think they're 4-2. So they actually have a line in on the playoffs. They made the playoffs last year. But it's also high school football. I mean, anything can happen. I mean, if the Kimberly's quarterback, Danny Vandenboom, is committed to Wisconsin, if God forbid he goes down right away and they need to rely on backups, granted their backups are probably still better than Appleton West, but still, it's an insane record that clearly is not getting the attention it deserves in Milwaukee, and I don't really necessarily think it should. I mean, that's not the way this city runs of paying attention to what's going on outside the state. But for Kimberly to win 3 titles back to back to back, with a good chance at a 4th, and to have the state's all-time winning streak, if they accomplish it, You're talking about yourself as the greatest ever. Probably the only disclaimer I can think of in my head are those Edgar and Stratford teams that have won like six straight titles in like D6.
Yeah.
But even then, that's while losing a game or two here or there. This is being on your A game every single Friday, which I think takes an enormous amount of talent.
And people will remember they were down 3 scores in the state title game last year against Arrowhead.
Yeah.
Like, it looked pretty bleak for them, and somehow they pulled an unbelievable rabbit out of their hat in the greatest state title game that ever was, and they have not lost again since. So, yeah, I shouldn't put such a low percentage on Appleton West. That's probably unfair because they're not one of the bottom teams in that league. So they could, anything can happen, as you said. I certainly don't expect it to, but that would certainly be a story if Appleton West is able to win that game. That would be amazing.
Oh my goodness, I can't even imagine.
Right. So
can't even imagine.
Circling back to Whitefish Bay, Jake Walter, who's their head coach, was the interim coach last year as Jim Teachin was battling his illness. And the reason they kind of disappeared is everyone thought they were, I mean, they're very young. Everyone thought they were just going to kind of disappear for a while because they were rebuilding. They had lost a ton of seniors. They were very young, and quarterback Cade Garcia has been awesome. That close call against Brookfield Central in overtime to open the year looks even better as Brookfield Central just keeps winning and winning and winning. I mean, they're legit. They've proven it. And their receiver, Alex Anthony, was our player of the week this week on the push. He caught 13 passes, had a huge day. And now they go into a game with Germantown, and Germantown's kind of fighting for their playoff life. They really need to win this game. So that's coming up for them. And I really think that we're going to see a battle for the North Shore Championship between Homestead and Whitefish Bay, a couple teams that should be undefeated when that one rolls around.
Beautiful. You know who else is undefeated?
The Wisconsin Badgers.
Nice. You picked up on that digitally. That's well done.
Yeah, your segues are a little bit easy to pick up on. No offense, but they are.
Ooh. I'm giving you the silent treatment.
You did. Yeah, there was a couple seconds there where I thought I lost you.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
don't you insult my joke.
Your jokes aren't very good. No, your jokes are very good, just not the ones you tell on TV.
You know who else is very good?
Who's also very good?
The Wisconsin Badgers.
Way to double down. You don't. You take that punch and you stand right back in there for another one. Well done.
Oh yes, I do. I think they are very good, or they're at least good. I think we can say that for certain. But college is so funny, man, because how good is Michigan State? We have no idea. And you can play this game. You play the transitive property of college football, and you can play it for hours and just not get anywhere. Because if you wanted to build the case that Michigan State's a terrible team, it's extremely easy to do. All you do is say that they hung on to beat Furman in week one. They had a bye week two. They beat Notre Dame, who now lost to Duke and Michigan State. So Notre Dame is a nobody team. Duke, then you play that game with Duke playing Northwestern, I think either this year or last year. I mean, it is so fun to play this game that they have beaten nobody. And actually, you can do it with Michigan, too, because Michigan so far, I think they played Colorado, and that might be the best team that they played.
Definitely.
Oh, man, it is just so fun to play this. This is why college football is amazing, because you know nothing.
Yeah, it's just like high school, because you come into the year and there's so many new people. You sort of just have to rely on reputation, tradition, and like the two or three guys that you know are going to be back. And football, as we know, is much more complicated than that. It's not like basketball, where if you have a stud, you're going to be good automatically. So it's high school. You spend the first 4 weeks of the season really learning what you have, and even then you can't predict everything, as you can't for any sport, but you're right with college football. I mean, Notre Dame, a lot of people thought that was a Final Four team, and now they're so far beyond, you know, so far from that standard. You know, so does that completely discount the Michigan State win over them? Michigan State did not play well against the Badgers. I don't think anybody will deny that. But the Badgers played so sound. They just didn't make any mistakes. They were opportunistic. They did everything you can ask them to do. The quarterback made some really nice throws. I mean, they weren't perfect. The Hail Mary-ish at the end of the first half is an example of not a great throw. But there was a lot to like, especially on defense. TJ Watt of Pewaukee was the Big Ten Defensive Player of the Week, and Walter Camp, National Defensive Player of the Week. He had 2.5 tackles for loss, 2.5 sacks. I mean, he's a stud. So they did some great things and shut down a team that can run the football. I go into the Michigan game thinking, well, Wisconsin is not going to beat Michigan, but I certainly felt the same way about the Spartans. So now I don't know what to think is the bottom line.
Yeah, I think it's not terribly surprising that they won. It's how they won. I mean, they dominated them at Michigan State. And I think it is worth mentioning that Riley Bulla was out, you know, their star, absolute stud linebacker. But Wisconsin wasn't exactly healthy either, you know? I mean, they're playing with an offensive line they never even dreamed about 3 months ago. So I think it's just impressive the fact of they went in and dominated. And I think it is it's almost a snowball effect of what they did against LSU has snowballed into what they did against Michigan State, which can snowball into what they did against Michigan. But now again, I'm talking myself out of it because look at how awful they looked against Georgia State. So clearly what they did against LSU was negated by what they did against Georgia State. It's just, this is why college football is so frustrating and so amazing all at the same time, because there's just so many different ways that you can look at things. And you still don't know what to think about the Badgers, other than some people think they're a top four team in the country. I think I saw one AP voter had them fourth on his ballot. And yet, you know, they're sitting there at eighth. And to me, that feels like it's way too high. But you look at the fact that they beat Michigan State and LSU and you're like, well, that's probably two of the best wins anybody has. You can just talk in circles all day. I love it.
Michigan has had some injury problems over the course of the year. Their cornerback Jordan Lewis was really one of the maybe the top players in the country. He came back this last week and didn't look like he missed a beat. He had a very good game. So, but like you said, they're not exactly playing powerhouse programs, and so we don't have a good gauge. And I think you look at the Georgia State game, if you want to talk in a macro sort of emotional sense, for Georgia State, that's the biggest game they're going to play all year. I mean, that's the one that they're going to game plan for, prepare for, be the most up for until we get to the sort of the late game pushes for the playoffs or whatever it is they'll be competing for, the Sun Belt title perhaps.
You just can't help but say push for the playoffs, can you?
It is a little bit ingrained in my brain at this point. I'm always thinking about when to plug next. But so in an emotional sense, you can understand why Georgia State would be very ready for that game. And Benjamin Wargle last week talked about how they did have a good game plan. And they were prepared very much for the Badgers, whereas the Badgers were coming off a nice, easy win following that LSU game, looking ahead to this crazy start to the Big Ten season. You can understand why the Badgers looked at that as a tune-up. I wouldn't even say, even if you accuse them of looking past Georgia State, feel free to do it. And I don't blame them for looking past Georgia State. You don't go in expecting to have to really battle for your life to win that game. And now they're in a situation where they clearly have their confidence at a high level, and you would think they're going to show well at the Big House. Why am I still such a non-believer, JP? I just can't envision them beating Michigan, but maybe that's just because I need a lot of evidence before I can say that team is a good team. They're sure putting a lot of evidence on the table.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I don't have a ton of confidence either, but I think a lot of that is probably just us buying into the Michigan hype train that has been rolling for, you know, upwards of 4 or 5 years now, because we keep hearing about all this talent and everything that they have. And well, yeah, when you're playing Hawaii, a lot of that talent probably shines through. So we'll see. And just as a disclaimer, they did play Penn State in their opener, which I definitely do not count as a good team anymore. I think James Franklin is really regretting leaving Vanderbilt right about now. But anyway, no, I'm with you. I doubt that, you know, if you're asking me my prediction, I don't think they win. Obviously, I think that they can. They've shown that they can beat good teams, apparently. And I think there's a chance, but I don't think they're going to. So until I keep getting proven wrong, which I'm more than happy to be proven wrong, I have to see it.
Let's chat a little bit more about the Michigan Wolverines with Mark Snyder of the Detroit Free Press. He covers them full time. I chatted with him about what Bucky can expect on Saturday. All right, my guest is Mark Snyder from the Detroit Free Press. He covers the Michigan Wolverines football team. You can find all of his coverage at freep.com, the Detroit Free Press website. And Mark, the first thing I wanted to ask you about is a guy that we know very well at home, Ben Bredesen of Arrowhead High School. He's gotten a ton of playing time for Michigan on the offensive line. I know there was some thought he might be, even as a true freshman, a candidate to be a starting tackle at some point this season. He has been playing at guard a little bit. I know it's hard to gauge on the offensive line how good a freshman has been, but I guess from what you've seen, what is your sense of him and maybe the freshman class in general? I know that was a very highly regarded group of guys. How big of a role are they playing for Michigan thus far?
Well, I think with Ben, they realized really quickly that he could adapt and he could pick things up quickly. And, you know, as a freshman, especially on the offensive line, the strength is a big deal. And I think a lot of people talk about that, but I think the adaptability and learning the technique is really important, and he had a lot of that to begin with, and I think that's why he was able to step in so early. Ben Braden, I get their names confused.
Yeah.
And I think they do too. It sounds like the coaches have gotten them confused. You know, they were both playing left guard early in the year, and Ben Braden had, you know, he had some issues in terms of his back, and they didn't know how much he could do. So in the first game, they shared some time, but especially the first game quite a bit. And Bredesen held his own. I mean, I think he was pretty solid in that role. But then when Braden came back, he's a senior, he's stronger, he's been through the system, he knows the cohesion with the group, that Bredesen's kind of back in a reserve role. But the fact that they chose to play him so quickly and that they wanted him in there says a lot about what they think about his future. In terms of the whole class, they made a big impact already, and it's going to be a bigger impact. I think the running back, Chris Evans, he jumped in there and he had 100 yards in his first game. He had a couple touchdowns, and he's been in that running back mix. They have a 4-man rotation, and he's one of those. You've seen Rashawn Gary, obviously, the number one player in the country. He's a defensive end, and he's had quite an impact, a couple sacks, got a couple tackles for loss. He's been very influential in every game so far, and his role is growing. And the cornerbacks, David Long and Levert Hill, have played mostly, you know, end-of-game time, but that's going to change now that Michigan lost cornerback Jeremy Clark for the season. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of freshmen that are in the mix there.
Is it oversimplifying to say the recruiting spiked the way it did because of Jim Harbaugh, that it's all a Harbaugh effect and there's buzz around the program that hasn't been there for a while, or is it a little more complicated than that?
No, they had pretty good recruiting under Brady Hoke. I mean, not the last year when things were falling apart, mm-hmm. but before that, you know, they had top 10 classes a couple times. I think it's what's changed is kind of the way the recruiting, they're more aggressive, they're into different territories. If you're going to Texas and California, I mean, they were doing some Florida, but a lot more Florida, not as many Midwest kids. So you're seeing more athleticism, more speed. You're seeing all different kinds of things in terms of higher-level prospects. And they hit New Jersey hard. They made a real big commitment to it. And obviously, you know, a number of those New Jersey players are starting to get in here and make an impact.
I think there's kind of this national appetite for Michigan to be quote-unquote back, you know, back to that really elite level that they have maybe haven't hit with Rodriguez and Hoke, and now there certainly is the thought that they might be back. Is there something you sense different about this team that indicates that they're going to cash in on a top 10 ranking, top 5 ranking, and be there in that Final Four at the end of the year, or are they still maybe a year or two away?
No, they have a coach who's proven he can finish. I mean, he took a team to the Super Bowl
right.
in the NFL. I mean, he won the Orange Bowl. You know, I guess Brady Hoke won a Sugar Bowl, so maybe that's not the best comparison. But, I mean, Jim Harbaugh has taken these programs and built them up at every place he's been. And he hasn't stayed anywhere long enough to see it completed. But I think in Michigan, that's the opportunity they have. I think they have he likes being here. His family's settled here. It's, you know, they're getting comfortable. He likes the town. I don't think he's going anywhere. And I think that's an opportunity. And I think they've gotten there quickly, so there's a chance for him to realize that, Michigan to realize that under him. I think that the reason that it'll be different this time is because Harbaugh and his staff are NFL guys. They understand the professionalism of it, and they understand how far they can push the kids. Rodriguez, and especially Hoke, you know, that Hoke didn't push the kids as hard as they could have been pushed, and I guess no one really knew that until now when you see the alternative and you see what Harbaugh is doing.
I know Michigan State isn't your primary beat, but I'm sure you're kind of aware of it, and all of sure. Michigan is aware of it. How did last week's game change the expectations for Michigan fans going into this one? I mean, is it seen that Michigan State just had a really bad game, or that Wisconsin is better than people thought, or I'm sure it's a little bit of both? I mean, is this game now a bigger deal than maybe it would have been 2 weeks ago at this time?
Maybe because of this ranking thing. I mean, I don't know if you're aware that Michigan's lost 11 straight games to top 10 opponents. So I think in that sense, I don't know that internally that's a huge deal, but externally, I mean, it's a statement thing for them. If you're rebuilding this program, you got to beat top 10 teams because you have to beat them to win Big Ten titles and national titles. So that's kind of where this is at currently. I think that there's a statement in that. In terms of Michigan State, you know, Michigan State defines itself in relation to Michigan. Michigan does not define itself in relation to Michigan State. So I think that they took things away from that game in the sense that they saw how they shut down the run, how Wisconsin did, and that's something that obviously Michigan wants to key itself on. They want to be a great running team, but you saw Michigan State was a great running team against Notre Dame, and then Wisconsin shut them down. But the difference is that Michigan, what it means is that Michigan's passing game has to be on point because they have an alternative, which Michigan State did not.
Would it be hugely disappointing to this fan base if they don't wind up in the national championship or at least in that Final Four? I mean, is that the goal that everyone has right now, or
no.
I alluded to earlier?
No, no, not at all. I don't think that's real. And maybe if people believe that, I guess I can't get in people's heads. But I think that this is a program that has not won a Big Ten title since 2004. Right. They've watched this Big Ten title game going on for what, 5-6 years now, and they've never been in it. I mean, there are steps that have to be taken. I mean, maybe you get it all done in 1 year, but I think that, you know, if they make progress, they haven't beaten a successful big Michigan State or Ohio State team in 10 years, mm-hmm. basically. You know, so what are you looking at here? You're looking at steps. You gotta build it up. You gotta beat your rivals, at least one of them, prove you can do that. Then you gotta win your division. Then you gotta, you know, win the Big Ten. You got to go to the Rose Bowl. I mean, these are things that haven't happened in Michigan forever. So for Michigan to jump up and say, well, we're going to be in the playoffs and win the national title, yeah, maybe. I mean, this is the year to do it. I mean, they'll go to with seniors, you know. I mean, they have a couple tough road games. Michigan State doesn't look as tough now. Iowa doesn't look as tough now. You know, you just have the big Ohio State game looming out there. So, you know, if it comes down to, you know, a two versus four game or something like that, Matt, at that point, yeah, then your expectations change. But at this point, you know, there's a lot of steps that can satisfy Michigan fans and make this a season of progress even without winning the national title.
All right, last question. I don't know if you this. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask about what it is like covering a team where Jim Harbaugh is the coach. Obviously, there's a national opinion of him that might be different from what you experience. I mean, is it as crazy as it kind of looks like it would be from afar, or is he a lot easier to
deal
with?
Absolutely. It is crazy because it's constant. I think it's just the relentless nature of Harbaugh. I mean, last week it's just a game week against Penn State. You know, first. Big Ten game, so it's kind of interesting. It should be interesting. And then on Tuesday, you know, he's just dropping milk ads. You know, he's doing a national milk commercial with his family, and then he's talking to 15 radio shows about it, which has nothing to do with football, and he only talked a little bit about football, but, you know, it's last night, you know, Jim Harbaugh, you know, Arnold Palmer dies, and he's on his radio show, and the host makes some passing comment, you know, about, you know, we wish, you know, condolences to the Arnold Palmer family. Mm-hmm. And he's like, do you ever know him? And Harbaugh's like, yeah, I played golf with him twice, 18 holes each, you know, 1990. That's Harbaugh every time. I mean, Muhammad Ali died, you know, he had a connection. I mean, there's always something with Harbaugh that is just something more. I mean, there's always something more to do, something more to that he has, and it never ends. It's amazing. A couple weeks, you're going to have Hank Aaron here. Well, how is Hank Aaron coming to a game? Well, Hank Aaron's granddaughter, you know, attends Machine Works in the football building, but Harbaugh met him in the summer when he was on a satellite camp tour. So, you know, it's just always something.
All right, Mark, I really appreciate it. Again, Mark Snyder from the Detroit Free Press. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
Switching gears to the hard court, the Milwaukee Bucks got some great news and some very not great news over the past week or so. Giannis Antetokounmpo signed himself an extension. He'll be here for a few more years. He is the absolute centerpiece of what the Bucks have been doing the past few years. He's a very exciting, point guard going forward, or whatever he wants to be. But then the news that Chris Middleton, who has really come on and become a great player in the NBA the last 2 years, has torn his hamstring. He'll be out for the majority of the year. We talked about that a little bit at the beginning of the podcast. And then at Bucks Media Day, they got to talk all about this stuff. So, JP, what were some of your takeaways from Bucks Media Day? I'm guessing things are a little bit somber after the Middleton news.
Yeah, it was kind of weird. First of all, just the roller coaster of emotions like you started off talking about. I mean, this was such a good week for the Bucks to extend Giannis as they did last Tuesday, to get a superstar locked in. You know, I don't want to say they've added these huge pieces, but they added little pieces that they were expecting to help. Dellavedova, Toledovic, even Jason Terry, Michael Beasley are veteran guys that they were expecting to help. I mean, I think this team got a lot better than it was last year. And then on top of that, and probably even bigger, think of all the momentum with the arena and the practice facility getting built. I mean, like, this was a great offseason for the Bucks. This was building off of last year's failures, getting better, and cashing in on progress. And then this happens. And just personally, I feel so bad for Chris Middleton because this happened to him in college. Well, first of all, as he said, this is how he got his start in college, of somebody got hurt and then he was able to jump in as a starter and succeeded.
But this is just, it's so unfair because he got hurt and he slid all the way to the 39th pick in the NBA draft. He was, before he got hurt, he was talked about as like a top five, top 10 talent, which would have shaped his career so differently because people think this Chris Middleton is just some off-cast guy who can kind of shoot but isn't that great. When in reality, if he didn't get hurt, he's being talked about as one of the, you know, one of the best players in the league, which is where he should be talked about because of the way that he actually plays. He just doesn't have the hype to go around it. And now this was a season where you felt like he could build. He got his money last year, last offseason, had a weird up and down year last year, but still ended up being the team's top scorer at 18 points per game. And now again was poised to build on it this year. And to see him get hurt, and like I said before, he's going to be out at least, you know, 5 or 6 months. Probably best case scenario, 5 or 6 months, which leaves him almost nothing of this year. And this, again, this was a year that the team was supposed to build. So it's just so frustrating to watch this happen to a guy who really could use a good break.
What a fascinating case study in how draft positioning shapes your narrative.
And oh, absolutely.
Bringing that up really well. Like, you don't even, you think of Middleton as a guy who sort of was a late bloomer because he was a guy that the Bucks traded for. He wasn't a key piece. And then you look at Jabari Parker, who has not had the production of Middleton. Granted, the injury has a lot to do with that, but you think of Jabari Parker as, I mean, he's going to be such a superstar. And yeah, Chris Middleton is there too. But you're right. If he had stayed healthy in college as a top 10 pick, it would be such a different story. I mean, he'd never be on the Bucks because I have a feeling, you know, where he started, he'd still be there. They would not let go. You would not let go a top 10 pick the way you might a second round guy.
And that's the thing. So when he was in Detroit, I mean, he was the trade of Brandon Jennings and Brandon Knight, and Middleton was the throwaway guy in that trade. Of everybody in Milwaukee's just talking about, oh, okay, new point guard and this other guy, this other second rounder that they threw in.
Brandon Knight, who was a first round pick.
Yeah, you have to think about it as, no, Hammond knew what he wanted, this guy who he knew his skill set. And really, I mean, he's obviously the guy who worked out. You know, he's the centerpiece of that deal.
Yeah, so the Bucks are going to be a little hard up for shooting guard play because, I mean, that's kind of the spot where you felt like they might be the weakest. Yeah. I mean, Giannis could technically play all five positions, but that's probably the one spot you wouldn't really use him. And I mean, they still have Dellavedova who could do it. They've got Teletovic who could do it. They've got people who could be there, but Middleton just was the right fit.
Yeah, and so that's the message now. That's what they're saying, is that, you know, there's 15 guys on this team that we were counting on Chris to take a step up, but really it's going to be a team effort. So let's go ahead and listen to them. We'll listen to them one by one of pretty much everybody at Bucks Media today being asked what they thought of Middleton's injury. So let's get started. Let's hear from Chris Middleton himself.
Did a split, and then just I thought I overstretched it at first. I just tweaked it a little bit, tried to walk it off, really couldn't put any weight on it. Then just took it day by day, got an MRI I think a day or two afterward, and just found out the news. And it was tough at first. I mean, knowing that I'm going to be out for a couple months, longest time I've been out before. But, you know, it happens, you know. Luckily, it wasn't anything worse with the knees, just a hamstring. And I talked to a lot of people where they say, you know, some where you just go through the rehab, get the surgery, go through the process, but it's something you don't have to worry about when you play again.
Okay, now hear from the superstar, Mr., as JR calls it, Adetokounmpo. So hear from Giannis on Mr. Middleton.
No, I was mad, you know. It didn't even happen to me. I couldn't imagine how mad and sad Chris is, you know, and I was really mad because I was really excited for the season, and we would be really good, you know. Let's not lie, Chris is one of our best players in the team, you know, so I was really excited, you know. He'd be an all-star this year, but he went down a week before training camp, and I was right there, I was 2 feet away from the play, you know. But the thing that I'm thinking right now, the first thing is that what I can do to support Chris, you know, try to be there for him. And I know that he's going to come back healthy and better than ever. And as a whole, as a team, the thing we got to do is focus on our main goal, you know, make the playoffs and do whatever it takes for us to be there.
Here's Jason Kidd. That's the Bucks head coach, JR, by the way. Do you know that?
Thank you. Yes, I know him by the dulcet sound of his voice. We're just very excited.
So here's J Kidd whispering into your earbuds.
We all understand it was a freak accident. As Wes just talked about, it's sport. You know, we all would love to stay healthy and make every shot. But that's just, you know, part of the game. And we have 15 guys, and we got to keep moving forward. We feel confident that we can still compete, and we are going to compete.
Next, we have John Hammond, Bucks GM, still the GM. He has not been taken over by a coup. So here is GM John.
More than likely, there's probably not the free agent out there that's going to be able to replace Chris. Discussions would probably be more involved in regards to trades. But, you know, right now I think we're going to go into camp with who we are and what we have at this point and you know, see what this can do for our team.
Okay, let's go to the one and only Jabari Parker next.
Well, personally, it was a little bit shattering to me because he's such an important piece for us. He brings so much on the court besides just scoring. He opens up the floor for me because, you know, their man gets hugged up. Allows me to penetrate, so it's definitely something that we're just going to have to adjust to. It's going to be hard, and it sucks, but I'm going to take my responsibility and trying to help the team out to my best ability.
Lots of Bucks subplots with the team trading for Michael Beasley, so that's interesting. I remember Michael Beasley is the guy Wisconsin beat in the second round of the NCAA tournament one year, but he's back, and he's got an interesting career arc. So he is back on the team. They traded Tyler Ennis away to get him. Jabari Parker has been kind of speaking about some political issues surrounding in the post-Kaepernick climate. He's been talking about a lot of the stuff that impacts him. So I think that's kind of cool. That's another thing that's been going on. And Bucks president even talking about the city of Milwaukee and pointing out its very segregated nature causing a little bit of a stir, even though I personally think he's completely accurate, but it's causing a little bit of a stir, and that's definitely something that will be surrounding this team going forward.
Jabari literally said in 30 years he wants to be thought of as a leader of the next civil rights movement.
That's like, amazing.
Who thinks that way? Who says that? Let alone as a 21-year-old NBA player. Like, even before he said that phrase, I was sitting there listening to the press conference thinking Milwaukee is so unbelievably lucky to have this kid, as not only just to have him in the city, but to have him in a position of influence, but to have him as your star player on your NBA team. Like, Milwaukee is so unbelievably lucky that Jabari Parker fell to them at number two, because if the 76ers took Parker first and then we would have Andrew Wiggins, I'm sure he'd be a good player, but man, they are lucky to have Jabari.
Yeah, he seems very much wise beyond his years, and not to get too political, but the Kaepernick thing is so interesting in that it has really stirred up, I would say, more athletes who are willing to speak politically and think politically and be more involved. And that has not been the trend over the last several years. I think for obvious reasons, because you're talking about people with a lot to lose trying to stay in their lane, so to speak, and stay out of the limelight. But having, that's to me why I thought the Kaepernick speech was so, the way he did it was so eye-opening and was important, because he was able to make this issue front burner now week after week after week, as opposed to just saying something calmly to a camera like they did at the ESPYs, some NBA players at the ESPYs a few weeks before that. This really got people talking and seems to continue to be doing that. So it's a very interesting time, and obviously the presidential election right around the corner, so there's a lot to talk about. It's a very interesting moment.
Yeah, it's crazy. It certainly has gotten the attention, has gotten, you know, even Megan Rapinoe, you know, so it's even spread to the women's side and to soccer.
Oh, WNBA?
It's spreading kind of everywhere. And now, you know, now especially the cynics, but I think a lot of other people are saying, you know, now it's time to, all right, you started the conversation. Where's this conversation going? So now what are we going to do with all this attention that we have on it? So I'm very intrigued to see what's going to happen over the next, you know, maybe month or two as things start to probably ramp up. And like you said, I mean, when you think about the next month or two, that's the election time and things are going to get crazy around here.
I was looking up Brandon Knight. He's only 24 years old. It's just amazing how young some of these players are and they've been around for long enough that you think that they're so much older. But yeah, wow.
Yep.
It's the Bucks too. Very young.
And meanwhile, Malcolm Brogdon is 23. Just getting drafted. He is already older than 4, 5, 6 of the guys on the team already.
Yes. And you do get the sense he'll actually play a leadership role as a first-year player in the NBA, which is an interesting spot to be in. But The Bucks still have high expectations for them, even after the Middleton loss. I certainly think this is a playoff team. I think anybody who feels otherwise is very pessimistic, but obviously they thought they were a playoff team last year, and that didn't work out, so we will certainly see.
Yeah, I can't talk about the playoffs as sure-handed as you are. I think there's a chance, but I still think they need a lot to go right. They need guys to play to their potential. They can't just be okay. I think they need to take those steps towards having their career years this year and then higher career years in the future.
We could talk more about the end of the Milwaukee Brewers season, which is right around the corner on the next edition of Initial Reaction. It's sort of a slow burn to the finish, but obviously great moment in Major League Baseball on Monday night when D. Gordon homered, his first homer of the year in the wake of losing pitcher Jose Fernandez, who was killed in a boating accident on Sunday, early Sunday morning. Just awesome to see Gordon bat right-handed in honor of Fernandez and then hit a home run from the left side of the plate. It's like a Len Bias moment that I know that's older than even me and older than a lot of people who'd be listening to this podcast, but just a very goosebump inducing moment for Major League Baseball on Monday night. So we'll have to talk a little bit of playoff baseball, JP. That's still something I really enjoy is playoff baseball, even when my team is far from it.
No, that's going to be all you. Baseball was done for me around my birthday, the end of April, and it's been done since then.
Fine, we can talk Iowa football all you want.
Thank you. Actually, please no. Their best player, their best wide receiver, just got a broken foot and he's out for the season. So let's talk about anything else, please.
Yeah. Iowa football struggling. 14-7 against Rutgers, probably not the bounce back they were looking for.
Not quite. They do get Northwestern at home, so there's another chance at a bounce back. But it is shaping up to make me very happy that I enjoyed last year for what it was and didn't take it for granted. So I think that's going to be my good memory for a while.
Well, following the Badgers win over Michigan State and the Packers win over the Lions, the Wisconsin sports team will look to make it 3-0 over a two-week window when they take on Michigan on Saturday. That'll be good news for me. My wife is from Dearborn, Michigan. She is a big Michigan fan and a big Lions fan and a big Detroit Tigers fan. So this has been a good week for me, but we will see. That's definitely going to be the story that we'll have to look at again next week.
Well, good luck with that. In the meantime, what are we reading over on your websites there, buddy?
Well, I won't go ahead and push the push one more time.
Yes,
that seems like a little bit of overkill, but we always have some pretty good stories up on Lake Country Now and MyCommunityNow.com. Got a story about the Kettle Moraine football team, one of several teams in the area, still with a chance to make the playoffs for the first time in several years. There's a handful of teams that are looking to snap some playoff droughts. Kettle Moraine's got three guys who pretty much were not in their current roles on last year's team at all. You've got last year's quarterback is now a receiver, last year's defensive back is now a quarterback, and a kid who was injured all last year is a receiver. And they are putting up some crazy numbers. Kettle Moraine, one of the best offenses. As much as we talk about Oconomowoc being a very good offense, Kettle Moraine's offense also very, very good. So we will talk about that a little bit. We do talk a little bit about that on LakeCountryNow.com. Stephen Teets has a story about the Franklin football program honoring a guy who really got their program going from the grassroots level. He passed away a year ago. They're honoring him at their football field. So you can find that at franklinnow.com. And, of course, lots of stuff on my First and Short blog throughout the year. You should just follow me on Twitter at J.R. Radcliffe. That's J.R. Radcliffe. You can find links to all these goodies at that location.
No, thank you. Instead, I'll be busy watching Brookfield Central take on Menominee Falls on Friday night, live high school football, as Brookfield East is still ranked in the top 10, even despite falling to Brookfield Central. So they are a very good team. So that game is Friday night. As far as Sports Weekly, Chris Milton's injury, Packers beating the Lions, blah, 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 Lake Country Lutheran. So check out the highlights. Check out the kicker, Declan Eaton, if you know what's good for you. And then finally a story, the Nina boys tennis program has always been really, really good. They have 10 state titles and I think 8 runner-up finishes.
They were in our conference growing up and I played tennis and they whooped us every time.
See, and the girls have always been really good. They've had 12 trips to state, no titles, until last year. Lucky number 13. So we talked to the team about that, which was fun, and that's on Sports Weekly.
Beautiful, JP. Thanks again for joining me on Initial Reaction, my friend.
Thank you for joining me on Initial Reaction. Thank all of you for listening. Bye, friends.